Welcome to the Teacher Learning Network Spotlight on an Educator, a podcast series that is a part of the TLN's Early Childhood Journal. I'm Ben, and I will be hosting this session. In this podcast series, we will be talking to early childhood educators from around Australia about a variety of different topics that relate to each journal's focus area. We will also ask the educators to share some reflections on their teaching practice, all with the aim to provide you with some tips and tricks to help you in your own professional practice. Okay, so sit back and relax and let's get into this edition of Spotlight on an Educator. Edition 1, Dealing with Trauma in Early Childhood. Hi, thanks for being part of this podcast. Can you start off by telling us a little bit about yourself and where you work?
Hi, I'm Manik Katre. I'm an educator by profession. I worked in early childhood industry, including Brighter Futures in New South Wales. So Brighter Futures helps families in their role as parents and ensuring the safety and well-being of the children. I currently work at a not-for-profit organization called Woodville Alliance, and we support families from disadvantaged backgrounds in regards to children's early education and ensuring the children have the best start as they transition into primary school. I'm also a TAFE academic at the same time, so I teach early childhood courses, diploma and bachelor of early childhood education. Culturally speaking, I'm from India, and that allows me to understand the perspectives of migrants and that differences in the culture and how do you navigate systems that are culturally ingrained in you, but also the systems that you're currently living in, and how do you make a best of both the worlds.
In this next section of the podcast, we will feature five questions related to the content for this edition of the TLN Early Childhood Journal. What types of trauma would an early childhood teacher possibly have to deal with in their role of educating young children?
So the children in an early childhood setting might have experienced a one-off trauma, for example, an accident or something along the lines, or they might have faced complex trauma, which means the possibility of ongoing neglect or exposure to domestic violence, abuse, etc. This complex trauma also has extremely toxic effects on our brains, and our brains, as the current brain research says, is extremely malleable in the first 5 years of life. And the experiences we have in first 5 years of life will shape how the rest of our life goes. Another couple of types of trauma is the intergenerational trauma, a trauma that child has never experienced or faced. So the trauma situation, the incident is not faced by the child, but some of the previous generations. And it is possible that the impact of the trauma is passed down through the generations, through our DNA memory, without us experiencing that trauma. I also want us to be aware of, not only we will come across children who have experienced trauma, but it is likely that we might come across parents or adult family members who have experienced trauma, and the way they react to us when we want to build relationships with them or when we have certain suggestions and questions and so forth.
What are some signs that a student may show if they are experiencing or have experienced trauma? What should a teacher keep an eye out for?
So essentially, the very first and foremost thing I would suggest is we know the children. You get to know your students, your children. And when I say this, I mean as their personality, as their typical behavior, as the way they typically express the emotions. And once you know the student, once you know their typical reactions to certain incidents and all that, you're then looking for anything that looks out of character for this child, but on a very regular basis, not as a one-off thing where they might be just unwell or might have something going on, some big overwhelming emotions in their mind. So some children might become shy and withdrawn, so they might not be engaged with their peers. they might not show any interest in the play or any interest in developing or maintaining the relationships and friendships they have in the early days and weeks they have developed or early months. Some children might be out of characteristically aggressive or verbally loud and all that. So again, any behavior that is out of characteristics of for this given child and that is happening on a regular basis is what we are looking for. Another signs could be the child might start, if they're toilet trained, they might start wetting themselves or soiling themselves, a loss of appetite, not showing interest in things that they would have previously interested in, or being scared of things that a typically developing child wouldn't be scared of. So loud noises, or if there's a construction next door and the loud noises have become a part of your environment, unfortunately, those sort of things where you wouldn't expect or other children do not react in the same way, that is when you need to keep your eyes more open. You need to be more aware of this particular child and what is happening in their life.
What techniques can you recommend that can assist an early childhood teacher in dealing with these students?
So just like we looked at question one, where trauma comes in all different shapes and forms and sizes, the strategies will look very different for different children. But essentially the basic of that, all those strategies, is building trustworthy relationships with this child and with the family, supporting them to develop a sense of belonging and a sense of trust, a sense of agency, self-identity. Acknowledging the strengths of this child is really important, because it is probably likely that this child's strengths have never been acknowledged and they always have heard how they aren't good enough for whatever is happening in their life. Some of the strategies we can use in different settings is having a set routine, whereas we are giving the child a predictability. They can anticipate what is going to happen after 10 minutes, after an hour, tomorrow, and so forth. It is also acknowledging the child's feelings at different points in time and acknowledging their difficulties, saying, I know it is such a hard work and I really appreciate that you are staying focused, or I can understand it is not easy and you might need extra help. Also acknowledging the child's strengths, so acknowledging the good job they have done until this point in time. And the most important thing is catching this child engaged in a positive behavior, positive action, positive emotion. So you want to reaffirm the positivity in this child's life through the smallest bit, to acknowledge that they are capable of producing good or appropriate or positive social interaction, social behavior, academic results, and so forth.
What support is available for teachers out there who have a student who has experienced trauma?
The supports that are available for teachers will vary, but some of the really lovely websites, very useful, either webinars or research articles or practical resources that teachers can implement in the classrooms and in early childhood settings, include Australian Research Alliance for Children and Youth, ARACY. Another one is Australian Institute of Family Studies, AIFS. The third one is Australian Child and Adolescent Trauma, Loss and Grief Network. This website has a lot of research articles, evidence-based articles, but I haven't come across any practical strategies or webinars on there. Some of the other websites or resources you want to use include Calmer Classrooms, which is by Education Queensland, so Queensland Department of Education. Emerging Minds is another website where I have personally done a few webinars and I have found it very useful, very practical and hands-on. Also, I'm very aware that at the moment, Early Childhood Australia is bringing out some webinars in regards to early signals, first responses. I personally have not been engaged in that yet, but the titles look really appealing and useful in regards to attachment, early brain development, and all that. So keep your eyes on that space.
What What should an early childhood teacher do to support their own mental health during a time where they are dealing with a student who faces trauma?
Now, there are a range of things every person can do, and things will work differently for everybody. But some of the ideas I would suggest is looking after your physical health. So getting some sort of exercise in any which way, shape or form that you enjoy. Looking after your physical health, so looking after nutrition, as well as looking after mental health. So probably listening to relaxing music, doing yoga, anything that's going to help you to stay up with. Social contact is really important. So being in touch with family and friends where you feel refreshed after meeting with them, after chatting with them, after catching up with them is really important. Similarly, another aspect of what there is a small body of research, there is a growing body of research that says gratitude. So being grateful for little things in your life is really important. And again, this helps us to find those every little thing in our life that we can be grateful for. So it could be as simple as there was no traffic today. That's such a great thing because then I wouldn't get stuck in traffic and so forth. So again, those gratitude and physical health and psychological health and well-being is really important. But different things will work for different people.
In this next section of the podcast, we will feature four questions which allows the speaker to reflect on their professional practice and their ideas around teaching, dealing with challenges, successes, and sharing some advice to their peers. What do you think makes a great early childhood educator?
Great teachers are the ones who have a strong, comfortable, and honest relationships with the child. So it is about having that trustworthy relationship and being honest to the child, but also being sensitive to the child's needs throughout the child's time with you is important. So acknowledging child by their names, by their likes, being aware of the life incidences the child goes through and being mindful of little things. So possibly if a child says, my grandma is coming for dinner tonight, the next time you see that child and you might want to ask, how did grandma come for dinner? How was it? Or anything like that. So again, you're telling the child that the child is important to you. Another thing is acknowledging the student's achievements and as appropriate telling them a critical feedback is important. But again, when you're giving them critical feedback, be mindful that you're identifying the behavior that they have shown that was something that you would like them to improve. And you're not talking of them as a person. So being very clear about a certain behavior of that student is not appropriate, but as a person, you know them and you trust them that they can change that behavior or their reaction at different times.
Can you share one story where you felt you succeeded in your professional practice? And what about this event makes you feel like you succeeded?
So family from Celt background, one of the parents have acquired brain and speech impairment, acquired brain injury and speech impairment. The other parent had cognitive challenges, undiagnosed cognitive impairment, language barriers, and so forth. So this child had a lot of issues in typical raising the children, and there were aspects of negligence. And we wanted to support the family to understand what the child was doing was somewhat typically developmentally appropriate for this child. So as much as there was slight developmental delay, we weren't sure if it was an environmental factor or there was a developmental delay. Over a period of time, what we did is we invited mom to watch our interactions with this child. We would record ourselves when the child did something. It was a bit of hit and miss, but when the child did something inappropriate, and then how do we interact with him? How do we talk to him? How do we engage him into possibly fixing his behavior or undoing the damage? So he might throw a puzzle and we might get him to help with the puzzle, but all that acknowledgement when he is doing appropriate behavior is what we did discuss with the family. Also, when the family did explain on more than one occasion saying, this little boy, I'm going to call him John. So John doesn't listen to us. And at one stage, I did very openly asked his dad and mom saying, do you always listen to your parents? And I think that's when the penny dropped a little bit for the dad and he go, no. So I was like, of course, your child is not going to always listen to you, but it is important he's safe and he listens to you on safety matters. But you also correspondingly respond to if he asks a question, if he has a request, for example, let's go to park. If it's practically possible, take him. So respond to his needs, respond to his ideas and requests, and that's how you're going to get him to respond to your needs. The relationship is about give and take, so it has to happen on both sides.
What was one challenge that you have faced in your professional practice, and how did you work or how are you working to overcome it?
One of the challenges I have faced in my professional practice, and I'm not sure if I can say I have overcome it, but I'm still working on it. So it is about identifying the trauma in the parents themselves or in the adults in this child's family. So as I mentioned in that earlier example of this young child with developmental delay and possible neglect or the environmental factors, when I speak to the family, and it took me a while to understand that one parent has acquired brain injury, the other parent had undiagnosed cognitive impairments. So, and also one of the parents have probably experienced refugee-like background. We weren't sure until the child was in preschool. But understanding those complexities that the families bring to you, because quite often we are not only working with the child, but we are working with the whole family to support the family to achieve the best outcomes for the child. But, and again, from time to time, I would acknowledge the strengths of this family. So one day this mom wanted her child to attend the preschool, which is a state-funded service, for 5 days a week, because she's got a Centrelink allowance, CCB back then, for 5 days a week. And I had to explain to her, and I spent probably about 3 hours using an interpreter in between to explain how state and federal governments are different, the policies are different. And the mom actually eventually said she wanted to go to Canberra to talk to the government because the government policies weren't supporting her child. And I'm extremely proud of this person who has a brain challenge, a cognitive impairment, cognitive challenge, who has figured out that it wasn't the preschool who was saying that the child can't attend 5 days, but essentially it is about the government policies. And she was such a strong advocate for her child's needs that she was ready to take on the whole government. So again, it is that trauma, supporting parents through the trauma is such an important job. And I have to be honest, that is far more challenging because quite often we are not aware of the trauma, and over a period of time, we just become aware that the family might have faced a trauma. So again, similarly, building that trust and open relationships and acknowledging their strengths is what I can reiterate when supporting a family, the adults who have faced trauma.
Do you have any words of wisdom that you would like to share with the listeners?
There are some Australian resources, such as Australian Research Alliance for Children and Youth, ARACY, Australian Institute of Family Studies, AIFS, Australian Child and Adolescent Trauma, Loss and Grief Network. Emerging Minds is another very handy website that I have used, and they've got a few webinars and practical tips and strategies. Another useful resource I found was by Department of Education Queensland, Calmer Classrooms. So they talk about some practical hands-on strategies we can use. BU, what previously used to be Kids Matter, is another website where they talk a lot about mental health, trauma, and various mental health concerns that are faced by children but also families. Another, if you want to delve a bit deeper, is a good resource is the Center on Developing Child at Harvard University. This gives you a bit of understanding, more of theoretical understanding about the early brain development and how trauma might impact that. I'm heavily also influenced by the circle of security principles, and it heavily talks about the relationships and the early attachment that can help me understand. As an educator, I have been able to understand the importance of relationships and attachment with the child, and that translates to any age group of students where we build those relationships that are appropriate for the given age group. Also, another website by Early Childhood Australia, Early Signals First Responses. It's a brand new webinar series I have come across. I haven't done the webinars yet. I have registered for some. So I'm just hoping it's a good resource, but usually Early Childhood Australia resources are pretty spot on as well. So I'll recommend all these resources.
And that's it for the Teacher Learning Network Spotlight on an Educator as part of our Early Childhood Journal. Thank you to our guests for sharing their ideas, experiences and reflections. And thank you to you for listening. We look forward to seeing you next time. Bye for now.